With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hi, this is Chris Myers. For more than three decades, I've covered some of the biggest events in sports and talked with some of the most fascinating personalities. But now I want to invite you to join me for my new podcast, CMI, the Chris Myers Interview on Podcast One. Covered a lot of events, World Series, Red Sox, White Sox breaking through at their time. The Super Bowl as recently as Mahomes and the Chiefs coming back against the 49ers. I was there to grab Brady after he had that tremendous comeback against the Falcons in the Super Bowl. And some tough times, the 89 earthquake World Series that rocked the Bay Bridge, and first to talk to O.J. Simpson live after both of his trials, and on the air through the 1996 Atlanta Olympic bombings, informing people as best we could at the time. We'll go in-depth on stories past, present, and future to the effect of the world of sports and everybody in and around it, from current athletes, Hall of Famers, and some people you and I know. Hope you tune in to CMI, the Chris Myers Interview, on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. Cannot tell you how useful Game Pass is as a tool. It's how PFF has been running for the last decade plus. Any of the games you hear us talk about on our review show, you can dive in, see the whole game in just 45 minutes with condensed games, relive all the calls, the catches, the crazy plays, everything we're talking about. You can see it all in those games. They've also got a ton of extra football content. It's the only place where you get to see from the league's best players in their film session episodes. The one from Davante Adams is awesome and well worth watching. See how these guys view the game and break down their concepts, their techniques, all of the in-depth stuff that's just so cool to see individual NFL players tell you all about. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops.
Let me tell you guys about an all-new prop-based fantasy football daily fantasy website called Monkey Knife Fight. All first-time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight that put at least $20 into their account while using the promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's a $40 value for just $20. And you'll get the opportunity to turn that $20 into even more by playing daily fantasy and prop games at one of the fastest growing fantasy sports sites in the USA in Monkey Knife Fight. Go to Monkey Knife Fight and deposit your $20 with promo code PFF today to receive your free PFF Edge annual subscription.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
What is up? Little different voice here coming from you on the PFF NFL show. First time back hosting, I think, like 2 years. Sam, Steve, they're on the reserve COVID list right now. And we need two negative tests from them until they get back. We don't know if they're positive, but they've been exposed to positive. So they are on the sideline right now. But just like anyone in the NFL that has to deal with it this year, it's next man up.
Yeah, and in fact, we get three for the price of two here. So I think the listeners here on the first week of NFL season are getting a value.
Yeah, so it's me, Mike Renner, Eric Eager, Solomon Wilcots, and we're going to be going through every single game this weekend. We're playing football. Could not be more excited about it. So let's jump right into the Thursday night, the opener, the rematch of the semifinal game in the AFC last year. Chiefs, Texans. Chiefs favored by 9 in this. Eric, where do you see this one going?
This was interesting because it opened right 10.5, 11, which is about where we saw it end in the divisional round. And, you know, a lot has changed. I mean, Houston lost their best player, you know, in DeAndre Hopkins. But the Chiefs are losing a player, I think, for them that is really not trivial, and that's home field advantage. I mean, their fans are some of the best fans in all of football. And so
Beat your chest a little harder there.
Yeah. Okay. I see this line move as sort of a response to that. I also see it as a response to what is, for the first time in a long time, Solomon, some stability out of the Houston Texans, right? Signing a top five quarterback in the NFL to a long-term deal, I think signals that a Houston team that we've long given a lot of crap to is made a good decision, right?
Yeah. And I can say this. This is probably for the first time since I've been around the National Football League as a player, as a reporter, as an analyst, that I'm coming into a season with more question marks almost everywhere. And I think it's okay to say, to most of the questions that are put to me, at least anyway, I don't know. And the reason why is because every year Bill Belichick says, look, let me get to the end of September. I'll tell you what team I have. Now, that's with an off season, right? That's with preseason games being played. When none of the teams can put their teams into real action, live action, I'm telling you right now, all the other coaches, if they were true to themselves and to everyone else, they would say, we don't know what we've got. We're going to see on opening day. We're going to try to do the best job that we can do, but we're going to see. It's going to take a while for these teams to find themselves and find out how they're going to go about the division of labor and who's going to be making the plays, how they're going to get the ball down the field. But I can say this about this contest. Andy Reid is almost always good for coming up with not just one, not just two, but several plays that the other team has not seen before, nor have they been able to prepare for. So that's what makes, I think, this matchup very exciting.
Yeah, that was them against the Patriots a couple years back, where they just unleashed a few different concepts that ended up starting to take over the NFL. And I think, to your point of the uncertainty, I think it's going to favor teams that almost went status quo this offseason. Teams like the Chiefs, where if they bring back pretty much everybody, they know the scheme, they know the system. I think it's going to favor teams like that, at least early on. I think down the stretch, guys will get assimilated, but at least early on.
Yeah, I think continuity really does matter, right? But and here's a sneaky place, I think, where we look at this game, we think, okay, the Chiefs are bringing everybody back. Houston is lost their best player on offense. Mm-hmm. Breshad Breeland suspended for this game. Mike Pinnell suspended for this game. Juan Thornhill's coming back from an ACL. He's not listed as a starter on the Chiefs depth chart. Houston has Randall Cobb, who averaged 10 yards per target last season, Kenny Stills, who's no slouch, and Will Fuller, who is healthy. And when Will Fuller is healthy, he's a good football player, as well as two good tight ends in Fells and Aiken. And Chiefs are pretty bad at linebacker, right? They have to hide those guys. That's where I look at this game and I think to myself, you know, Houston's real goal here should be to stay in the game by, you know, throwing the football and moving it. And I think that they probably can against Kansas City.
And I will say, J.J. Watt did play the last outing. Was not J.J. Watt.
He looked bad against the Bills.
Looked bad against the Chiefs. He is healthy now. I think that could be a difference, although Mitchell Schwartz has had his number over the years.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that, I do recall how Houston jumped out on top of the Kansas City Chiefs in that playoff game. Remember, they did the fake bubble screen. Kenny Stills is running wide open down the field. You're wondering, where is the Chiefs secondary, right? And so you figure you might get more of that. But I believe if Bill O'Brien is really smart, he's got to understand you can't win in the shootout against Patrick Mahomes at Arrowhead Stadium, whether there's virtual fans or real fans. I believe you got to slow the game down. I believe you got to steal a chapter from the playbook of the Indianapolis Colts, which is probably one of the few teams that went into Arrowhead Stadium and beat them, along with the Tennessee Titans during the regular season last year. But David Johnson comes to this football team, I think, for a reason. Maybe he helps them keep the ball away from Patrick Mahomes. We've already seen that the best defense against Patrick Mahomes is keeping the ball away and keeping him standing next to Andy Reid on the sideline. For my money, I think that's got to be the way to play the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, and to your point, the Chiefs last season in their losses to AFC South teams, which included Houston, gave up more than 200 yards on average to Houston, Tennessee, and Indianapolis. And I think, to your point, like, the best defense against Patrick Mahomes is the sideline.
That's right.
And Houston is going to have David Johnson, who was once highly regarded as a player by us. Duke Johnson's a good football player as well. He's got something to prove, though, right?
David Johnson's got something to prove. Bill O'Brien's got something to prove by bringing David Johnson over in this huge salary. I think there's a lot packed into that decision.
And that offensive line is
I was going to say, just as important as David Johnson's, this is the best offensive line that Deshaun Watson has played with in his entire career.
Bar none.
Titus Howard looked good as a rookie when he was healthy. Max Sharping did as well. I think they both take steps in year two. So you could be looking at a quality, actually, offensive line there for the Texans. But I do think the Achilles heel here, the Texans did not do anything in their secondary.
Yeah.
They got absolutely trounced, 51 points, and don't change anything in their secondary over the course of the offseason. That, to me, obviously, Eric Murray they brought in.
They're leaning on the idea that a former first-round pick in a number of spots can revive their career, and that coverage is unstable. So, you know, I think of who's the they used to play for Houston, Kevin Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, great 1 year and horrible the next.
Yeah.
They're looking and saying, okay, Vernon Hargreaves, those guys are going to go from being terrible a season ago to okay this year. You know, it's not the worst strategy in the world, but it's also probably not one that I have a ton of confidence in.
All right, so who are we picking here?
I go Kansas City straight up here.
All right.
I got to take the Kansas City Chiefs.
I'm going Kansas City, and I think, honestly, they cover in this one. All right, on to the Sunday slate here, 1 p.m. games. Seattle, 2-point favorite, heading across country to Atlanta to face the Falcons. Eric, how do we feel about that line?
This is a game, to Solomon's point, about not knowing a whole lot.
Falcons.
Yeah. There's a couple games this weekend where I'm excited to watch it just to learn something about the teams. Mm-hmm. I think there's some chatter that Seattle's going to try harder to give Wilson more early down passes. The Falcons under the radar were 6-2 during the second half of last season. Are they able to continue that with, you know, which Falcons, you know, back seven players going to get hurt in this game is really the question I have. And it's like, you know, so this one I want to watch and see. I think that there's a lot to like about both of these teams, but, you know, many of them are, you know, most of the things that these teams do are maddening year to year.
I could tell you right now, I'm going to be watching the Seattle Seahawks defense because I don't believe they can get to the quarterback. I don't think they can get to Matt Ryan. I think Matt Ryan's going to have all day to operate in the pocket. And that means what? The back end of this Seattle Seahawks defense really has to hold up. And I think that's why they tried to leverage so much to rebuild that part of the defense, knowing that they're going to really have problems pressuring the opposing quarterback. Can they stop Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley with a secondary that I think is going to be a really good one for Seattle? I just don't know that week one they're going to be able to play at that high of a level to stop this offense. I think Atlanta shocks a lot of people, including me, because I just think the world of Russell Wilson. I know that the offense could do their job. Right now, I'm just not buying a lot of stock in the Seattle Seahawks defense, at least the front end.
Yeah, and that's was the – they don't match up well because Falcons' biggest weakness last year, bar none, offensive line. You know, starting two rookies – injuries up front. They did not have a good offensive line, but I don't think Seattle's going to be able to take advantage of that. Matt Ryan last year sacked more than any other year of his entire career. I just don't see Seattle being able to take advantage of that, and if they can't, they're putting a lot of pressure on that secondary to stop guys like Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, which might be the best 1-2 punch at receiver in football.
Yeah, I mean, the real thing here is it's going to put a huge test the whole season for Seattle on coverage versus pass rush.
No doubt.
I mean, if their coverage is as good as we think it could be, we're going to see some not household names get 7-8 sack seasons.
Yeah.
If other teams are able, you know, if their secondary doesn't play to expectation, then it's going to be really difficult for the defense to have any success.
The Seahawks secondary is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just go ahead and say that. So it's going to be a great matchup. It's just that to expect them to be able to hold Matt Ryan, who I think is going to have a lot of time in the pocket, mm-hmm. and then still keep Julio Jones out of the end zone, Hayden Hurst, the tight end in this offense. I just think they've got too many weapons to throw at the Seahawks defense, and I think they're going to hit home.
Yeah, I'm picking the Falcons in this one. It's because of that matchup, and because when you know that you can have time as a quarterback, you can scheme to that with double moves, longer developing routes.
Good point.
And Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley on double moves are nightmares for any secondary. I don't care if you're a good secondary. So I'm going to go.
I don't think
Atlanta.
There's a lot of betting value on the Falcons, but I will take them here. I think one of the reasons being is we're talking about a 10:00 Pacific time game. Mm-hmm. Like that's maybe always the one home field advantage we see that sticks is these West Coast teams having to travel East Coast and play early for them. And so, yeah, let's see if the Falcons cannot start the season 1-7.
Like I know. The 6-2 run at the end of the season is probably, I think, the team that we're going to see at least in the first game of the season.
All right. Next game up, Browns traveling to the Ravens. Ravens, an 8-point favorite here, but the Browns were one of the teams that beat the Ravens last year during the regular season. Eric, how do you see this one going?
Yeah, not only that, but they beat them in Baltimore. Yeah. So this is one where I think we're going to see. So the Ravens are great, right? There's not, yes. But there's not a whole lot of – there's not very – you know. We saw them the last two seasons. They beat the Bills like 47-3, and then they absolutely crushed the Dolphins week one last year. I think the Ravens are done proving in week one that they're a good team. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot for them to do in the regular season to prove anything to us. The games for the Ravens, I think, are in January. So when I look at this, there's only one way a team can go, and I think the Ravens, it's down, and the Browns, it's up. And when you look at, you know, the type of people the Browns have brought in to place Andrew Berry, Kwesi, I'm going to botch his last name, and then obviously Kevin Stefanski, who people in Minnesota were very sad left.
Yeah.
That I think that you're going to see sort of the value of those things in this game. I don't think the Browns necessarily win, but I think that they're going to be very competitive in this game, and I think it's going to foreshadow a season that Browns fans haven't seen since probably 02.
Hey, last year, even with Earl Thomas on the field for the Ravens defense, the Cleveland Browns went in there, hunk 40 on them.
Yeah.
40. Now, I still remember Nick Chubb running all over the Ravens defense, and I believe the Cleveland Browns have, for my money, the best tandem of running backs of any team in the National Football League. Kareem Hunt once led the league in rushing. We know that Nick Chubb, right up until the final game of the season last year, led the league in rushing until Derrick Henry snatched it out of his hands. So I just believe that this offensive line is much improved in Cleveland, that they can control the fight. I really do think they can play keep away from Lamar Jackson. They're going to be able to run the ball themselves. I think this is going to be a highly competitive game. I think it's one that the Baltimore Ravens should win. I'm going to pick them to win this game. But I think Cleveland's going to leave this game feeling really good about themselves.
I don't know how you can feel really good about yourselves after a win, but I do agree that it will be competitive, and I'm excited to see what this Browns offense looks like, because last year, they did not have an identity. Their identity was RPOs. Like, that's not an identity for an offense in this day and age. That's kind of an ancillary aspect to an offense. The Stefanski, Shanahan, Kubiak coaching tree is a tried-and-true method to offensive success in the NFL. It has worked pretty much every single stop for those guys, and I think it's really going to turn around this Browns offense because they have the talent to do it. Like, they have their talent, a receiver and quarterback, to get it done.
They have the talent on offensive line, right?
Yeah. So
finally, right, because they got two tackles in Wills and Conklin, but also their talent matches up with what Minnesota was able to put together a season ago. I mean, going into last season, who would you have rather had at quarterback, Mayfield or Cousins?
Mayfield.
Yeah, I mean, so, and a year last year where the Vikings had two really good wide receivers, sounds a lot like the Browns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They had two pretty good tight ends, and I know, like, Cleveland, you know, we Hooper has really impressed, and also Njoku's a player who has a lot of athleticism. And now the Browns not only have a running back who I think is better than Dalvin Cook, but they have a backup running back, to your point, Solomon, who's every bit as good as Chubb, in my opinion. So there's a lot there, and I think the Stefanski – I think the Stefanski offense gives the Ravens, who are, you know, the reason I like the Ravens under during the season is there's a lot of, they depend upon a lot of things linking up. And we've already seen one of those chains broken with Earl Thomas. They have, you know, Patrick Queen playing, you know, a rookie linebacker that, again, those things have to come together in a pandemic offseason. Like,
I went from Marcianda to G.J. Fluker.
Yeah, exactly. there have been, you know, some questions up front. I don't think they run as much with Lamar, which I think, you know, in terms of backbreaking plays in a close game, that's obviously one of the things that can do that. So I like Cleveland to cover. I still think the Ravens win, though.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with that. I think Ravens still are the better team, still win being at home, but 8 points just seems like too much.
Yeah, I'm taking the Ravens. I don't think any of us would be shocked if the Cleveland Browns not only covered, but if they walked out of there with a win. And we talk about Kevin Stefanski, the offense, and the Shanahans. And what is it that this offense does that we like so much that really impacts the way games are won, the way games are played when you're playing within this system? The Rams did it, of course, for several years when they really had it going. That is, they get the running back to the second level of the defense as well as any system that I've ever seen.
Yep.
And I've seen this for 20 years in the NFL. I saw it with Shanahan in Denver. I saw it with Shanahan with the Washington Redskins. I've seen it with multiple teams that have run this system. Remember the Houston Texans when Matt Schaub was at quarterback? You can't even tell me who the running back was I think it was Adrian Foster, but it got Adrian Foster.
Undrafted.
Yeah, that's right. And Gary Kubiak was the coach there. They got him to the second level of the offense, and Matt Schaub was phenomenal. It was Andre Johnson running down the field making plays. So everywhere this system has gone, they've got the runner to the second level, and they create big plays both in the run game and in the pass game.
I will say it's going to be difficult, though, against that Ravens front. Brandon Williams, Derek Wolfe, Calais Campbell now. They're going to probably stop the run, but I think we're all in agreement there. Ravens, but Browns going to keep it close. All right, on to the Jets going to Buffalo, face the Bills. Bills, a 6.5-point favorite here, a battle of a couple young quarterbacks that are in some kind of make-and-break years here.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say this, but I would probably, if I had to start over with the same conditions, I would still take Sam Darnold over Josh Allen. The hard part in this game is everything else. Mm-hmm. The Bills are one of the smartest teams in the league. They make really smart decisions on fourth down. Their defense is built really well, you know, back to front. None of their players in the front seven are top, you know, 10, 20 in their position in terms of salary, and they still get it done with Leslie Frazier's defense there. So, I don't know. I still think this is a close game, though. I think Allen makes enough mistakes where, and the Jets' defense is good enough. I mean, we talk about losing Jamal Adams. They drafted Ashton Davis, and Marcus May is already a good safety. Yeah. I don't think they were a top 10, top five defense, depending on how you look at it last season. I think they give the Bills a little bit of hell here.
I'm not so sure. And the Jets, remind me, they were 7-9 last year, but didn't it seem like their win-loss record was much worse than that?
Every Gaze team.
Right? And here's another note, and this is – I'm getting to a point here, but five quarterbacks you keep, okay? You've got five. Okay, some of them are on your practice squad. Some of them are on your regular – it's schizophrenic at the highest level of uncertainty. And that's who the New York Jets are. There's no way they're going to go in against a Sean McDermott-led team and a defense that is phenomenal and is only going to be better in 2020. I just don't know. Who can I point to that's going to really help this offense weaponize against the Buffalo Bills defense? I'm not seeing it. I'm sorry.
I completely agree with that. They had a ton of roster turnover. Yes. Like, they added a bunch of new wide receivers, completely all five new starters along that offensive line. I don't think any of it matters. I don't think it's going to be good.
Like, Where's the production coming from?
Like, Denzel Mims and Mekhi Becton could be good. I don't foresee it happening week one, after an abbreviated offseason like this.
Yeah, I mean, Bashaud Perriman, he was a player you look at the last couple of games for Tampa Bay, he added production in an offense, you know, that was, getting scheme him production. His issue in Baltimore was drops. He's only had one drop the last 2 years, if I recall correctly. So there are some there. But the other thing is what's the delta? I mean, the Jets were terrible last year with no receivers. I mean, that week one game against the Bills last year, Jamison Crowder had, 20 targets? Like, it's going to be better than that.
Think it's better. Actually, Robbie Anderson, to me, was a deep threat that you could expect him to hit home. I mean, he's good for at least one deep ball per game, right? I know Denzel Mims were brought in to bring them that kind of production. I think what we're saying, Mike, is we don't see it immediately week one. It may materialize over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. But against this secondary, where is the production coming from? The one thing about the Bills, look, I believe the Jets are going to catch a few balls. I mean, you know, Sam Darnold's not going to go over. Mm-hmm. The thing about the Bills secondary is they don't let you throw it over their head. They don't give you explosive pass plays. They tackle very well. And so it just becomes a long, arduous task to go on the road at Buffalo and think you're going to be able to put points on the board. The best chance they have is defensively, right, to keep the score down, to turn over Josh Allen a few times. Maybe you can score on defense and special teams. If you keep the score down, you got a shot. But in any kind of shootout, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Bills in this one and kind of the point we talked about earlier in terms of the Jets had incredible roster turnover over the course of the offseason. You can't get all those guys up to speed with no preseason.
Day one.
No one, day one. It's not going to happen week one. The Bills bring back four starters along the offensive line, almost the entire starters in your front seven. Only Josh Norman is a new starter in that secondary. I think the continuity there, I'm going to go Bills big.
I'm gonna disagree and just go with the Jets. I'm gonna pick a dog.
No reasoning behind it, but so it's all from the heart more than anything, right?
I think Josh Allen can keep both teams in the game.
I think Josh Allen improves. I really do. I think he'll be better. I don't think he'll have to come out and be a world beater week one. I think the only thing he needs to do to beat the Jets is protect the football. I'm going to be interested to see in the way that Adam Gase is going to at least try, because we hear him talk about it, how he's going to leverage the ability of Le'Veon Bell. I think Le'Veon Bell is going to be better. I think they're going to try to use him within the offense. But until they become productive and consistent on the perimeter in the passing game of this offense, then I don't know what more Le'Veon Bell could do. I think Sam Darnold's going to be better. But tell me where the production is going to come from. And I think this is just a really bad matchup for this offense against this secondary in week one. I'm going with the Bills.
All right, on to the Raiders, who travel across the country to Carolina to face the Panthers. Panthers, another team with a lot of roster turnover, but they had a lot of talent at the playmaker positions on that offense, and a new quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater. How do you see this one going here?
Man, the numbers like the Raiders this week, and I don't know.
Raiders minus three.
Yeah, I don't. This number started out, you know, basically a pick 'em minus one. Raiders, it's gone out to minus three. I think when people look at the Panthers having four starting defensive players as rookies, as well as, you know, all the things we just talked about, which is new coordinators, new coach, new quarterback, new weapons in the case of Robbie Anderson, and then a defense filled with players that, you know, are either not good or new. I think it's Raiders or nothing for me. But, you know, this is a game, again, I'm just not a huge fan of Las Vegas either, so it's just an interesting one.
I think the Raiders are going to look really good offensively, particularly on their very first maybe 2 to 3 offensive possessions. John Gruden does a wonderful job of scripting his plays, layering the offense, one play working off another. I think Carr's going to look good early. I think they're going to distribute the ball early. Watch, they're going to look very good. And then as you get to the second half, things will bog down. So if they're really successful at getting the ball into the end zone on those first 2-3 possessions, I think it'll be enough to win the game. They have a really good running back we know in Josh Jacobs. He breaks more tackles. He makes people miss. You talked about a young defense with a lot of young rookies on it. They're going to find it difficult to tackle this guy. And so I think the Raiders get out on top. But I wouldn't be surprised if Teddy Bridgewater gives them a fight. I just think he's really good, and I think Christian McCaffrey and I think they're going to have something working on offense. It's just that it's a new players, new offense, new coach, and how well can they get that up and running week one? That's the big question mark we talked about.
See, I like the Panthers in this one. I think people are underrating what they have offensively, because this is an above-average offensive line with the addition of Russell Okung, Taylor Mouton on the right side, very good. And then this trio of wide receivers and Christian McCaffrey at running back, about as good a weapons group as exists in the NFL.
Joe Brady, I always like Robbie Anderson.
He's a good deep threat. Curtis Samuel. And then Joe Brady as the OC. Teddy Bridgewater, I believe, is familiar with him from time with the Saints. I think there's not going to be too much of a learning curve there to where I think it could all come together earlier. Say hello to your new favorite place to play fantasy football for real money, Underdog Fantasy. With Underdog, all you need to do is the fun part of fantasy football, draft. Forget about injuries, trades, waivers, setting lineups. You set it, forget it, and wait for your winnings to come. This year, they have a $1 million tournament. That's right. Just draft the best team, and you have a shot to win $1 million in prizes. Sign up for Underdog today and enter the Best Ball Mania for a chance to win $1 million in prizes by going to UnderdogFantasy.com or searching for Underdog Fantasy in your app store. And after you sign up, make sure to use the promo code PFF after you make your first deposit. Here's a few reasons why you will love Underdog Fantasy. Never worry about forgetting to set your lineup again. On Underdog, all you do is draft, and then your best players automatically get selected every week. You can go big in Best Ball Mania for a chance to win $1 million in prizes, or play it a little safe in the bubble with only $5 entry fee to win $100,000 in prizes. All the information you need to win, such as player news, rankings, and ownership, is easily accessible in the app. Like I said, it's simple, free, and you have unlimited withdrawals. Go to UnderdogFantasy.com.
Solly, Bridgewater reminds me of a player that played when you were in the league, which is Jim McMahon.
Yeah.
Bridgewater reminds me of a player where it doesn't look great. The arm strength isn't always there, but the anticipation and the sort of – there was always a way in which Jim made the – you know, threw the right pass in the game situation, right? And never put his defense in a short field and never, you know – and won a lot of games like 17-13, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to your, I think that that might, you know, I think having a quarterback like that, you know, I don't know how it serves the Panthers this year when it looks like they could be in the running for the number one pick.
Yeah.
And he might get them to six wins just based on doing that. But in this particular game, it might keep it closer than what I was thinking, you know, what I would imagine.
I don't think Mike is far off, because I think if there's any game on the board that could end up being a shocker, it could be this one. And you and I both know the Raiders would limp back to Las Vegas saying, what just happened? Teddy Bridgewater is what just happened. Yeah. Because Teddy is he's a force multiplier in that way. If you've been around him and you've watched him play and you watch the way that his teammates interact with him, I'm telling you right now, there's a chemistry there that's building. I talked with him during our training camp tour and was able to speak with him and Coach Rhule, was able to talk to Christian McCaffrey about maybe the impact that he sees from Teddy Bridgewater. He says already the guys on this team love him. I mean, and that's something that it's hard for quarterbacks to go in and win over a locker room right away, particularly in this kind of offseason. Teddy has done that. He did that even when he was with the New Orleans Saints. We forget that last year he could have left and taken a bigger contract to go elsewhere. He decided to leave that money on the table because he wanted to stick and stay around Sean Payton and Drew Brees. And he talked about some of the things that he learned from Brees, some of the things he learned from Sean Payton. I think he's going to be able to enact a lot of those things in his career as he moves forward. I think we have not seen the best of Teddy Bridgewater.
So are you picking the Panthers then?
No, I'm not. I just believe that early on, I think the Raiders, and that's what I said early.
Yeah.
I think the Raiders are going to get enough. I think they'll be able to hold on.
Okay.
Remember, this is the Carolina Panthers. This is their maiden voyage, right, within this offense, with this
coach.
Yeah. I just think it's going to take them some time. And if the Raiders can put 14-21 on the board in the first half, I think it'll be enough. If they don't, if they get into a dogfight and don't score the points early, I think the Panthers find themselves as this game goes on, and that's how I think they can steal it from the Raiders.
All right. I'm going Panthers, Eric.
Raiders.
All right. On to the next matchup here. Bears traveling to Detroit to face the Lions. Lions, a 3-point favorite here. Eric's favorite quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky, did win the starting job.
Eric, yeah.
How do you see that going for them?
Yeah, I, you know, early on in the offseason, the Lions were going off at about a pick 'em here. I thought that was a great bet. I have a decent amount of money on that one. It's now -3. I think that's the right number. I think Detroit's going to be a team that is going to surprise a lot of people this year, and I think it starts week one. This is a team, you know, their tight end's a top 10 pick from a season ago. Their offensive line is not terrible. And their defense, you know, again, they were an example of once you get an injury here and there, it really changes the complexion. But you have Flowers, you have Jamie Collins, you know, in that secondary now, you Okuda, Trufant, and then their nickel guy, forgetting his name, and then Daron Harmon. Like,
Justin.
That's a really good secondary. And against the Bears, I think it's going to be enough.
It's a really good secondary, and they have enough, I think, of guys up front, right, that can generate pressure. Can they force Mitchell Trubisky to see ghosts? And if they can force him to have to read complicated coverages while providing pressure, I think we're going to see the old Mitchell Trubisky. You and I both know that, of course, did he win the job or did they give it to him? It doesn't matter, right? But at the end of the day, he's going to start. Does he believe he earned it? That's the real question. Does he believe he earned it? And did he significantly separate himself from Nick Foles? I think we all know the answer to that question. But it's going to be in games like this where he's going to have to prove it to everyone. And I think Detroit can create enough doubt in the mind of Mitchell Trubisky to make this a really tough outing for him. He turns it over twice, particularly early in this game. Detroit wins this game. If Detroit doesn't win it, I'll be shocked. I'll be very much surprised. So I'm taking Detroit.
The one matchup that worries me about Detroit in this one, and I'm still going to go Detroit, I just think it's a better roster offensively, is that Big V going up against Khalil Mack. Big V just has never been – I mean, they signed him to a big money deal to play right tackle. He has never been a great offensive tackle in the NFL. He has had his fair share of issues. That's just a mismatch. They're going to have to game plan around that.
That's right.
I think they will end up doing that and giving Matt Stafford the time to throw. But that's just the one matchup that worries me. If that goes south, I think the Bears will
take it. Big V is a guy you can win with, but he's not a guy you win because of.
Yes.
Tell you what, Matthew Stafford, he's got the weapons. He's got everything working with him. And he should have a running game, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's DeAndre Swift, whether it's Adrian Peterson, Kerryon Johnson. I mean, they've got everything they need to be able to maybe put the kind of offense together that everyone's kind of been waiting for to show up in Detroit. And he's got receivers to throw to who can make a lot of plays. I like the roster for the Chicago Bears. I like everything about them except the quarterback position. I'm going to be honest on that one because there's a lot of uncertainty there. If a quarterback shows up with the Chicago Bears, they'll be much better than what most people think.
Bears, though?
I'm taking the Detroit Lions in this one.
I'm taking Lions as well, same. Eric. All three going Lions. All right, on to the Colts, who traveled to the Jaguars. Colts an 8-point favorite here. This one, there's not much to write home about here.
Yeah, this one we probably don't have to spend a lot of time on. I like the Colts. I think, there's not a whole lot to say.
the crazy thing to me is the Jaguars' defensive line a few years ago. You had Yannick Ngakoue. Yeah. You had Calais Campbell.
Marcel Darius.
It was just a world beater. And now it's Josh Allen, who I like, but then Avery Jones, Taven Bryant, Adam Gotsis. It went south in a hurry, that defense. There's just not like a matchup in this that I foresee the Jags being able to win, and 8 points seems low to me.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for the Jaguars. I think the Indianapolis Colts could be one of those, I don't want to say surprise teams, but they're going to be much improved. I think they'll be very good, in fact. And I love Jonathan Taylor. It's going to be interesting to see how he's used within this offense because Marlon Mack is a 1,000-yard running back. He's part of that draft class of 2017 of some of the best backs we've seen in a long time coming to this league. And they're all starting to get their contracts now, right? And he might be one who's very deserving. But he's got to split time with Jonathan Taylor, who gives them a much more physical offense. I know that's something that they've been looking for. Chris Ballard talked about it. Frank Reich talked about it. They want to be more physical on offense and defense. I think they're there now. And remember, this team, I think they're in the playoffs 1 year ago. If Adam Vinatieri could maybe get a few more field goals through. This team wasn't bad last year. They just kind of fell apart down the stretch. I think Phillip Rivers does provide them the stability they need, but they're just too good in too many areas to go down to Jacksonville and lose. Yeah. I'm taking the Colts.
Yeah, I'm taking the Colts as well. And the offensive line for Indianapolis, phenomenal. With Phillip Rivers, I mean, it's going to be night and day from what he had in Chargers. And then Jonathan Taylor, that's going to be difficult to stop. That could be, rookie year Zeke Elliott, in my opinion, with how difficult that Cowboys team was, just because holes are open everywhere with an offensive line like that.
Colts have a pretty easy schedule. I agree with you in that regard. Especially against run defenses, to your point, Jacksonville, they play them twice. They're terrible up front. That's why I think the Indianapolis backfield, we're going to be asking questions in a few months. Is the Colts running the football out of heavy formations? Is that the new way to win in the NFL? And we're going to be the wet blanket that
it's
says
the new way for them to win.
Yeah. We're going to be the wet blanket that says, the way to win in the NFL is to play a crappy schedule like Jacksonville.
Well, here's the deal: they did beat the Super Bowl champion 1 year ago without Jonathan Taylor. They did that. They went into Arrowhead Stadium and they ran the football and played keep away. So that's what Frank Wright wants to do. And we talk about them being more physical. We haven't even talked about DeForest Buckner. He makes them more physical on the defensive front.
All right. We're all taking the Colts there. On to the Packers, traveling to Minnesota to face the Vikings. No home field advantage here, but the Vikings probably still going to be pumping in crowd noise. -2.5, the Vikings are favored.
Ooh.
Eric, how do you see this one rolling?
This is Green Bay. Screams Green Bay. I mean, looking at this, Vikings have to replace three corners. And I know some of their corners weren't good last year, but it's a base rate thing for me. Trey Waynes is actually pretty hard to replace. An average corner is difficult to replace, especially when you think of the guys they're trying to replace him with were picked 15 picks after he was, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to look no other place but Minnesota to know. It took Rhodes 3 years to be any good. It took Waynes, 3 years to be what he became, which is not much.
Exactly.
And obviously, Hunter might be out. Their interior defensive line is terrible. And their interior offensive line is pretty bad. And they only have one I would consider bona fide starting wide receiver. And so then all of that comes to Green Bay, and I think that this line is just reflecting that people hated what Green Bay did in the offseason, but they were coming off of a good year, right? Yeah. Like, you know, they're probably not going to improve this year, but at least in week one, I think they're better than the Vikings.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is that despite, you know, not getting impact players necessarily in the draft, I mean, their first and second round picks are not starters, are third stringers, in fact, right now. They still look like they could get better because their secondary is all going into that year three. Yeah. Like their secondary is all going into their prime, so they could take steps forward in other aspects just from what that roster was. Let me tell you guys about a new personal training app called MooseFit. MooseFit is a premium online workout program and remote coaching service that provides you with daily workouts based on your goals, the time you have available, and the equipment you have at your disposal. Is your gym still closed because of COVID, and you don't have any equipment in your home or apartment? Well, MooseFit also has bodyweight programs that will push you and challenge you. Are you heading to the beach and looking to tighten things up a bit? I'm always looking to tighten things up a bit. They have 15 different pre-made programs. MooseFit will have something for everyone. Additionally, MooseFit also offers completely customized programs that are unique to each member. No two custom programs are the same. I know I got my custom program. I told them I'm trying to get my 5K time down. They gave me a program for doing exactly that. Hopefully I do it. I think I'm going to do it. I know it's easy to follow with their daily goals that they set for you. You go to the app, you complete the workout, you check it off, you feel good about yourself, and then you look good afterwards. Purchase your MooseFit membership, and a MooseFit coach will reach out to you with a questionnaire. Based on the information provided in the questionnaire, your MooseFit coach will either assign a pre-made program to you or will create your custom program for you. All workouts are delivered to the members through an easy-to-use mobile app and desktop application that allows you and your coach to easily track your progress and make any adjustments to your programs that may be necessary. It's founded by a former Army Special Ops captain and former Division I athlete turned professional CrossFit athlete. MooseFit is well-equipped to help you provide you with daily workouts that will challenge you and help you reach your health and fitness goals. For PFF listeners only, use the code PFF50 and receive 50% off your first month. For more information, check them out on Instagram at MooseFit or on their website, MooseFit.co.
What if the cornerbacks for the Minnesota Vikings showed up and played well? Are you feeling differently about this football team? I mean,
yes.
I know I am. I really am. Now, And I do have respect for the Green Bay Packers wide receivers, even outside of Davante Adams. I have respect for them. I do think it's a tough task to ask young, inexperienced corners week one against Aaron Rodgers to hold up. And so it really is going to be about how well they can shut down the run game, because I do believe that LaFleur wants to run the football. He went and got A.J. Dillon for a reason. They're going to try to pound the run game, and they're going to try to make things easier for Aaron Rodgers to distribute the ball in the passing game. And so if the Vikings can hold up against the run, and I think their corners are going to play well enough, because I just think the Vikings, for me, are a better football team. And so I'm going to take the Vikings, even though I do know week one, Green Bay is going to come out, and they're going to really attack these young defensive backs.
If the Vikings' defensive backs struggle, they're not going to get much in the way of positive reinforcement.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Their secondary sucked a season ago, but their quarterbacks that they faced were Chase Daniel, David Blau, Matt Moore,
Aaron Rodgers,
Brandon Allen. Like, they got a ton of backups. You look at the Vikings' schedule coming up. It's Rodgers, Rivers, Tannehill, leading passer in the league last year.
Oh, yeah.
Watson, Wilson, Ryan, Rodgers, Stafford is their first eight games.
Trial by fire.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. And then they're going to go to Chicago. By then, Nick Foles is going to start. We saw what he did against them in the NFC title game. And then they get Dak. Those first 10, and then they get Teddy. I mean, those first 11 games, I don't see it. Like, it's going to be really rough for them. And I think it starts on Sunday. I don't know.
I think the Packers win this one, and it's because of the matchup that screwed the Vikings last year. Interior offensive line, they just got annihilated. Took over that. Kenny Clark ended
any
chance of a passing
offense. They made the blueprint for the Vikings
offense
to win the game against New Orleans, right? Putting their two edge players on the interior is exactly what they did against New Orleans.
Yeah.
And that's what Green Bay did to them in week 15 to, like, completely screw their ability to do anything.
Yeah,
and
Vikings saw 10 points and 16 points.
Neither team has proven they can stop the run.
Well, the Vikings are in such a different position offensively, because I know the Kubiak offense works, but it works in many ways because you're ahead. And the Vikings last season, because their schedule was so soft, were ahead a lot more. you play that list of quarterbacks, you're going to be asking Kirk to go three wide receivers from the gun in the second half of a lot of those games. I think that looks differently for him.
I think it works because they force defensive linemen to go on the run. They run you sideline to sideline. And let's face it, I mean, if you're the Smith brothers, what do you want to do? Get up the field. Yeah. They already aligned in these wide nines. They're getting wider than they should. And that's why people are creasing them right up the middle. Now, they've got to prove that they can hold up against the run, just in the same way that we're saying about the Vikings. I think they've got to prove they can hold up. That's why it's going to be sort of a mirror image of what both teams could expect from the opposing offense.
And I thought there was one matchup that could swing this towards the Vikings, and it was Danielle Hunter versus whatever the Packers were going to throw at it right tackle.
Know,
but it looks like Danielle Hunter,
you read, he's out.
Not
like, going to
be playing in this game. That's the case. I don't really see. I see this one going the Packers. I'm Sam Packers. Eric's Sam Packers.
I'm taking Vikings. I'm standing up. Yeah.
Going a little different. All right. I'm going to go on to the Dolphins traveling to the Patriots. Patriots 6.5-point favorites. No Tua Tagovailoa in this one. We're going Fitzmagic. He's the week one king, though. So, what do you think in this one goes?
Yeah, I
not a lot of other reasons to go.
Look, the Dolphins a season ago had a secondary that by PFF WAR was negative, meaning you would have been better off playing average practice squad players in that secondary. You look now, and you know Xavier Howard's back. Byron Jones is in that fold. Noah Igbinoghamy was drafted out of Auburn. That linebacking core, I mean, they got, you know, Van Noy. They have players, Landon Roberts. They have players who have played in that system before and have been a part of a successful defense. Yeah. And I think in this specific matchup, the Patriots, you know, have Julian Edelman and really no one else. And so, Cam, I'm bullish on Cam long term. This game in particular, I know the Dolphins are 6.5-point underdogs, but I think that they match up pretty well with New England in this game.
Of course they do. I mean, but here's the deal. So you are the Miami Dolphins. You're preparing your defense to play the Patriots. What film are you showing them? You know what you're doing? You're watching the Carolina Panthers offense to say, here's what we think they're going to do with Cam Newton. Here is what, I mean, you're chasing ghosts right there. You have no idea what Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels is going to do with this offense with Cam Newton under center. And there's no film, there's no tape, there's nothing that you have to go by. I think the Dolphins would match up very well if they knew what was going on. I think the Patriots roster, it's been decimated. This is not the same Patriots team from 1 year ago, right? But I think Cam Newton brings with him a lot of talent, a lot of bravado, and a lot of uncertainty in terms of what the defense for the Miami Dolphins can expect to get week one. And I think that element of surprise is going to be enough for Belichick and Josh McDaniels to out-scheme Brian Flores and put enough points on the board to win this game.
Yeah, we just saw this one. Week 17 last year. And the Patriots were not – they didn't have it wrapped up. They had to win that game. Did not win.
Did not win.
The Dolphins went in there.
And who scored the game-winning touchdown? It's Mike Kosicki against the linebacking core / safety. I mean, the Harmon's gone. Chung's gone. Hightower's gone. Van Noy's gone. Jamie Collins is gone.
Yeah, like the reason to go Patriots in this is Belichick. Believe that Belichick will be able to get it done. Because also Devontae Parker was the one guy to really get at Stephen Gilmore last year.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think that Gilmore is able to shut down Parker a little bit in this game. I'm really concerned, though, with, Gesicki if I'm the Patriots.
This is going to be a fun game because I think the Patriots can expose a lot of things. We know Ryan Fitzpatrick, he runs either hot or cold. I'm still not bought. I'm not sold on all the moves made in the secondary because when you take guys who have been mostly in zone coverage and now you're going to lock them down in zero and man-to-man coverage and think it's just going to happen overnight, Byron Jones, good luck. Noah Igbinoghamy, very young player. He's young for a rookie.
Yes.
Hasn't played a lot. Listen, no preseason, no offseason. Throw him in there against the Patriots. Good luck. I get it. But I got to go with the known here. And for me, that's the Patriots. That's Cam Newton.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Patriots as well. But 6.5 just seems
rich. Some breaking NFL news. The Vikings have placed Danielle Hunter on IR.
Ooh. IR? What was the...
Can I change my pick? No.
So definitely no Danielle Hunter.
From the Vikings, from the Vikings Twitter account.
All right. I'm going Pats. Eric?
I'm going Dolphins. I'm going to pick another dog here.
I like the pick there. All right. Eagles now 5.5-point favorites traveling to the football team. That's the Washington football team. Eric, how do you see this one ending up here?
This line has moved. It started at 6.5. It's now 5.5. And that, in a current NFL season with no with the extra point being at 33 yards and the Eagles being a team that goes for it a lot on two-point conversions, that's a key number in the NFL. So this move is significant. I think people look at the Eagles and a lot of the weak links are being broken. When you look at Andre Dillard being hurt, Lane Johnson is questionable for this game. Brandon Brooks is already gone.
Yep.
Malcolm Jenkins, the leader of their defense, is playing for the Saints again.
Jalen Reagor's missed a lot of time.
Yeah, it looks like Reagor might play this week, but
he's missed a lot of time.
Yeah. And so the Washington football team, like, talk to me about their front seven. I mean, this is a good front seven, and I know they're going to struggle on the outside on defense, but inside, Kendall Fuller's a good player, and Landon Collins is no schmuck either.
And I think Ron Rivera is one of the best defensive coordinators. Yeah. He schemes defense as well as anyone in the NFL. I think you'll see a big, big difference defensively in Washington. Offensively is where I'm worried about, because the Eagles reload along their defensive line as well as any team in the NFL, and they're going up against an offensive line that is still not good. Like, you are starting Jerron Christian at left tackle. You're starting Wes Martin at left guard. It is not going to – the results don't look like they're going to be good there up front.
This is going to be defense all day, right?
Because it might be low scoring.
We like the Washington football team. We love their defense. You mentioned the front seven. Mm-hmm. They are phenomenal. I think they're going to be dominant, particularly against an offensive line with the Eagles, where they're starting to play some musical chairs, have a lot of uncertainty with two starters out missing, and Jason Peters trying to plug and play every position, whether it's guard or tackle. I just believe that the Eagles just have too much. They're still a very good football team. They do have the quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Dwayne Haskins is going to be filling his way. Now, I got to take the Eagles in this one, but I think both defenses are going to make their presence felt.
Yeah, and Haskins, he just doesn't really have the weapons. Like,
he's got
offensive line aside. Yeah. You have Terry McLaurin, Steven Sims Jr., Dontrell Inman, rookie, and Antonio Gandy-Golden. I just don't see how that offense puts up points against the defensive line like that, even if the Eagles secondary is a little shaky.
I like Washington to go over 5 wins this year, and this might have to be a game that they win in order for that to happen. Haskins was under 2% turnover-worthy plays last year. I do think he keeps them in games, and having a presence like Alex Smith on the roster really will help him. I can't go that far this week. I've already picked 2 underdogs. I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Eagles, I'm taking Eagles.
All right, it's a unanimous decision there.
This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. Cannot tell you how useful Game Pass is as a tool. It's how PFF has been running for the last decade plus. Any of the games you hear us talk about on our review show, you can dive in, see the whole game in just 45 minutes with condensed games, relive all the calls, the catches, the crazy plays, everything we're talking about. You can see it all in those games. They've also got a ton of extra football content. It's the only place where you get to see from the league's best players in their film session episodes. The one from Devontae Adams is awesome and well worth watching. See how these guys view the game and break down their concepts, their techniques, all of the in-depth stuff that's just so cool to see individual NFL players tell you all about. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops.
All right, on to the afternoon slate, the 4 o'clock games here. Chargers traveling here to Cincinnati. They're 3-point favorites with Tyrod Taylor under center against Joe Burrow, the captain Joe Burrow officially now, and the Bengals. Eric, break it down.
This one always stuck out to me. I mean, I think the Chargers are probably the most overrated football team in the league.
I like that take.
They got better on the offensive line, but there was nowhere to go. At receiver, Allen is great, but I don't know if he is a Tyrod Taylor, Justin Herbert type receiver. Mike Williams is banged up, and their defense is going to be good, but they lose a decent amount in the Swiss Army knife that is Derwin James. I just don't see it. And when I look at Cincinnati, I think of a team that's really built to make Joe Burrow succeed. I mean, you're getting Jonah Williams back. They've made consistent improvements to the offensive line. It's not good there, but they're made consistent improvements. And Tyler Boyd is a two-time 1,000-yard receiver who plays the game just like Justin Jefferson did in LSU. I think that Burrow is going to come out and be very, very good, in my opinion.
I think Burrow's going to look good. I know for a fact, and speaking with Zach Taylor and with Joe Burrow, that without the full offseason, they did the smart thing. You know what they did? They know that LSU runs some pro concepts. They know the protection scheme is congruent to what we do at the NFL level. So let's use some of those plays. Let's allow Joe Burrow to use some offense that he's always been familiar with because it's pretty similar to what we do. And so they're not going to try to shoehorn him 100% into their offense. They've adopted some of those things that Joe's very familiar with. So I think his comfort level is going to be much higher. No one can tell me that the Chargers' defense is the same without Derwin James. You just can't sell me on that. He's that good, right? Now, they will have to deal with Joey Bosa. They will have to deal with Melvin Ingram. I think the Bengals' offensive line is much improved. If they're smart, they're going to run this offense through Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard and take the shots when they can and when they have to. And I think that's what they're going to be able to do, and I think it's going to hold up for them. I'm taking the Bengals in this one, and I think Joe Burrow is going to have one of those games for a rookie. I'm not saying he's going to play this way the entire season, but I think we're going to be surprised that he's going to look very good in his very first NFL game.
I think it's going to be a lot like when Cam Newton played his first game.
Or Matt Ryan, right?
Matt Ryan played his first game.
Jameis Winston.
But like where – and the funniest thing with Cam was that the whole preseason he stunk. They like kept him – they kind of kept him in a plexiglass like – and then the first game against Arizona, he throws for 400 yards. And I think Burrow is you know, kind of in there where we haven't seen him do anything with the Bengals yet. And, you know, they picked him as a captain this week. I think there's just a lot. He just seems like the kind of guy whereas, you know, if Justin Herbert gets in this game, it's just like I have the exact opposite feeling.
Yeah, it is crazy to me how similar the personnel they have for Cincinnati at wide receiver is to what he had at LSU. Yeah. And if you just take some of those, you know, A.J. Green being Ja'Marr Chase, Tyler Boyd being Justin Jefferson, and then adding John Ross to that mix, just a guy who was on the verge of a breakout last year, was on pace for over 1,000 yards before injury struck again. And the other thing is, the Bengals' offensive line isn't the only offensive line that's overmatched in this game. Like, the Bengals' defensive line is arguably better than what the Chargers are throwing out defensive. They're more complete, four across with Geno Atkins, adding DJ Reader, Carlos Dunlap, Sam Hubbard, and adding Mike Daniels as well to that interior. So I'm going to go Bengals.
And Lawson.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bengals and Carl as well. Lawson.
Yeah, I got to go with Bengals. I think this is a good fit. And the offensive line, I'm telling you, I just believe they're going to be much better than anything that we saw from the Bengals' offensive line 1 year ago.
All right, on to the headliner here of the afternoon slate. Bucks traveling to New Orleans to face the Saints. Saints 3.5-point favorites. Brady, Breeze, Eric, break it down.
The Saints are a complete team, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, not a weakness. Maybe linebacker.
The Sanders addition is probably the most underrated addition in football this year, don't you think? I mean, a season ago they had no wide receivers over, 400 or 500 yards. Ginn was very underwhelming. You know, the problems that they've had offensively are almost always because they don't have a second wide receiver option to Thomas. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, you have Cook, you have Sanders, you have Kamara healthy. Obviously, Latavius Murray is almost always good when they give him the football in spurts.
Is Andres Pete okay?
Taysom Hill.
Is Andres Pete, is he back?
I haven't seen.
I think, let me look at the, actually, green. If you go to PFF Green Line with the PFF Elite subscription, you can see the injury, for all of these guys. I'm not seeing Peter.
He looks like he's back.
He looks like he's back. So, you know, and Breeze always protects his offensive line. I mean, this is a game of two quarterbacks that protect their offensive line better than anybody else. I think it was you that brought up in a recording, right, that Tristan Wirfs versus Cam Jordan. I think of this as kind of like I saw you played with him, Chris Dolman, right? Like where you have an older defensive lineman who is skilled but also just like gets football.
Yeah.
against a rookie. I think Wirfs athletically could match up with sort of anybody in the league.
This you don't want this for
you
your first game.
You don't want Cameron Jordan, right? Like I remember, the first game ever in the Panthers franchise, Blake Brockermeyer had Chris Dolman, and Chris Dolman got like 5 sacks against him. I think that's going to be a similar thing with. You know, Jordan is going to give Wirfs, I think, a little bit of a headache here. And that matchup is one of the – I like the Saints. I don't know about the cover, but I like the Saints just generally.
And the interesting thing about, you know, saying Brady protects his offensive line as well as anyone, a lot of that was what they ran in New England also, though. Mm-hmm. Bruce Arians does not protect his quarterbacks that well. Like, he is asking deep drops, deep concepts. A lot of times –
And five-man protection.
Yeah, a lot of times it's tied to the play call, what your offensive line is asked to do. So I think New Orleans is still going to be – I mean, New Orleans is still going to be New Orleans. It's still going to be a ball out of Breeze's hands quickly, underneath passing game. If we are going full Tom Brady into Arian's scheme, you might not have the luxury of being able to get the ball out of your hand quickly and protecting yourself.
Listen, I love the Bucs because I think they're much better and more sound than a lot of people believe. I think the back end of their defense is much better than they were, say, at the first part of last season. They got better as the season went on and as it progressed. I think their coverage linebackers are phenomenal in Devin White and Levante David. But this is a tall order. Now, listen, the crowd's not going to be a presence there. So Tristan Wirfs, I think that's a good thing for him, right? That's a plus, because if it was noisy in there, he'd have no shot against Cameron Jordan. There's no doubt. But I just think that the Saints are the more mature team coming back in a system they're all familiar with. We've got a lot of returning starters. There's not a lot of newness with this club, whereas with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, there's a lot of offense. Moving parts. I just think they're going to be a much better team as the season progresses, and I think week one, there's going to be some growing pains for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so I got to take the Saints here.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't foresee the offense being what it could be right out the gate. I just think it's not going to all come together immediately, but I am excited to see this Buccaneers secondary because you got Antoine Winfield beats out Mike Edwards,
that's
incumbent
right.
starter, in his first season as a rookie already. We talked about a lot of guys who aren't starting around the league. Isaiah Simmons, you know, Jeffrey Okuda aren't necessarily starters yet. They named Antoine Winfield a starter. And then you have that young secondary group that we've raved about. Why, you know, then when they did draft this guys and kept going back to the well, and Carlton Davis, Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean, all those guys that flash, they're all physical corners. This could be, if they all come around, it could be a very
complete. Didn't they come around, though, at the second half of last year?
And they kind of did,
They finished the final 8 games. This secondary played on par. I think they were only second to the Patriots and the 49ers in the final 8 games of the season last year, according to our database. They were that good. And so Todd Bowles, he knows that area of the football team as well as any. And when he got rid of Vernon Hargraves, I was like, wait a minute, why would you do that? That's because I think he needed to make space for Carlton Davis. They really wanted him to come on, and boy, did he. He went up against the opposing incumbent receiver on the opposing team week in and week out, and he did more than hold up. He kind of proved that he's got some shutdown corner ability.
Yeah, Todd Bowles is one of the best defensive play callers in the league. I mean, you saw it in Arizona. You saw it, you know, last season. They were a team. They gave up. They were, what, I think 30th in the league in points allowed. But it's like when you look at the number of short fields that Jameis gave up, you know, it really masked their ability to, like, not only stop the run, but they were quite good against the pass season.
Well, and also they had Vernon Hargis playing for a long field.
So, you know, that – And I think Devin White, you know, really had an impact on the defense. If you look at, like, the heat maps that our colleague Timo Risky builds, it's like they went from being terrible at covering the middle of the field to being pretty damn good at it. And when you
–
I mean, I think defense is – you know this, Solly, better than anybody. It's like when you want to funnel teams to throwing at your good players, you know, and that's difficult to do if your players aren't very good anywhere, you know.
Like, if you don't have any good players. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what you want your sort of interior players to do, is to funnel things out to, you know, some of your stronger guys on the outside, and that wasn't happening until last year.
So do we believe in this New Orleans Saints secondary? Because, I mean, listen, they've got players. They've got players, and I like them.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, I see them get in these games, and they're giving up more. I mean, you let Kyle Rudolph, who we respect and like, but he slapped them all around and just walked his way into the end zone to close out a playoff game 1 year ago. I just think that the Saints secondary is good. I don't think they perform as well as what I expect, but maybe that's me. I think plays can be had against this group, and every time I watch them play, they give up more plays then I think they should give up.
Well, two new starters now. You got Janoris Jenkins at cornerback.
He's going to be good.
Malcolm Jenkins at safety. And it more just the fact that it kind of pushed guys who were maybe fringe stars, guys like P.J. Williams who were in playing time, to now your nickel, dime
That's
packages.
Right.
And I think that just kind of strengthens everyone where you don't have any real weaknesses. I'm not saying Janoris Jenkins is going to be exceptional, but I think he's still at least an average to above-average quarterback in the NFL, which is going
to
just
who covers Kyle Rudolph? Like, okay, they don't have Kyle Rudolph. Remember what he did in the playoff game against them. But this is going to be Gronk.
Malcolm Jenkins.
This is going to be O.J. This is going to be O.J.
Yeah.
Howard.
Yeah, Malcolm Jenkins.
I think that's Malcolm Jenkins.
And DeMario Davis is a player who was extremely good last season. And, you know, CeeDee Deuce, you know, the artist forming them is Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, he's in his second year. You know, it sounds like Patrick Robinson, 2 years removed from an injury, is performed well. Yeah, I mean, they have players.
We expect that. I agree with you.
So I completely missed the CeeDee Deuce news like a month ago when he changed his name.
Yeah.
And someone typed it into a chat, and I thought
like,
they were fucking with me. I was like, CeeDee Deuce. Like, that is not a real name.
I just punted on it when I was on the radio with Bobby Hebert. I don't know. I was like, well, I know he changed his name. I forgot to what. So I'm just going to call him Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah. All right. Eric, where do you see this one going?
Saints.
Now? Solly?
Yeah, I'm telling you, I got to take the Saints in this one. Yeah,
going Saints as well. That's going to make it unanimous. I think it's going to be a fun one, though, either way. All right, on to another fun one here in the afternoon slate. Cardinals traveling to the 49ers. 49ers -7, which that just feels rich to me with Kyler Murray there in year two. Eric, how do you see this one?
You know, I like the Cardinals against the spread in this game. The only thing I'm concerned about, you know, and you reminded me of this, is the Cardinals were so terrible at covering tight ends, and that's literally all the Niners have in this game. If you're backing the Cardinals in this one, you really have to think to yourself, okay, Jordan Hicks is in his second year playing linebacker in the system. He was a pretty good linebacker in Philly. Isaiah Simmons is going to play some. Devondre Campbell is going to play better than what they had a season ago. And then Buda Baker, they're going to put him in more positions to succeed. Mm-hmm. I think Buda, last season they put him in positions where he wasn't quite as good.
You mean on tight ends like Kittle?
Yeah, you know, like that. Right.
It's not a great position to succeed for him.
Yeah. So that's really where I look, because the Niners don't really have much in the way of weapons. If Debo's out and, you know, Ayuk is out, and, you know, and if you allow, you know, Vance Joseph to say, okay, we're going to stop the run and lock up the tight end, then what are the Niners going to do?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what Vance Joseph does with Isaiah Simmons, right? We haven't seen him. It will be his first game. I know they're going to play him in multiple roles. Will he be on Kittle? Will he be on some of the running back? It'll be interesting to see how he's going to be used in this defense. I do know this defense and the Cardinals cost problems for teams in the second half of the season last year against Seattle, then again against 49ers. They didn't make it easy on them. I'm going to take the 49ers because I think the Niners are just too good as a team. Offensive line, they're going to be better this year. Defensive line, they're going to be just as good because they've been able to replenish the loss of DeForest Buckner. And their linebackers are excellent in coverage. And they're good on the back end. I just think they're going to win this game, even though I think Arizona's going to assert themselves. I think they'll be good enough on offense to score some points and make this game interesting.
Yeah, I worry about the 49ers this year because you go up and down that roster. There's not a place I can point to and say, oh, they got better here. Or
you don't think they got better on the offensive line?
I mean, subbing out Trent Williams for Joe Staley seems like pretty much just a wash for me. Mike McGlinchey might be better heading into year three. I think that's about status quo, though, from where they were last year. Defensive line, you lost DeForest Buckner. Javon Kinlaw is just, he could be good year one, but he's not going to be as good as DeForest Buckner. I don't know, Richard Sherman turned 32. That's about the age where cornerbacks start to decline. I just worry that, you know, injuries strike at more key places this year. They kind of already did with Debo Samuel. I'm not going to say that the Cardinals win this game, but I'm going to pick the Cardinals to win this game.
I don't hate this. This was a pick.
I'm not saying they're going to win, but I'm picking
this
them.
This is a game, if you go to PFF.com and you look at me and George's spread picks, you know, this game along with the Browns, those are two games that we liked. There are reasons to like San Francisco here, but the thing about it is, okay, if you gave both players equal circumstances, which quarterback would you take? Would you take Kyler Murray or would you take Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'd probably take Kyler Murray at this
because the circumstances are better for Arizona.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so Now you're talking about everything else. And for me to back a team laying a touchdown or more, I need the quarterback plus something else.
Because
the quarterback matters so much. The only question I have, Murray a season ago was under 20% positively graded plays. That's like David Blau territory, right? He limited turnover-worthy stuff, and he limited the negative stuff. But I need to see him capable.
You need to see him elevate.
I need him throw a ton of positively graded passes. Now, the good thing if you're a Cardinals fan is, you know, positively graded passes are unstable, right? They're a factor of circumstances. It's a good baseline to limit negative plays, right? And you can fall into positive plays. But I need to see that from Murray, before I'm really all in on the Arizona bandwagon for 2020 as a whole. But for this game, I like them.
You're taking Cardinals?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm taking 49ers.
Ooh. Okay. The one more stat I would like to throw out. Kyler Murray, only 36 design runs all last year. I think they kind of reeled him in knowing that this wasn't the year for them. I think you see more of that. And the more he can get his legs involved, the more that can be a threat. That's
called developing a rookie quarterback. The guy barely finished the season. He was hobbled toward the end. I think he was very courageous to be able to finish those 16 games as a starter.
Yeah, if you had
more design run plays for him, he's not going to finish the season.
I forgot Brett Hundley had a good game in Seattle and won outright. The matchup in this game, the Niners, after starting Dre Greenlaw in the Super Bowl and playing Quan Alexander just base snaps and watching him in 20 snaps have 5 missed tackles on Damian Williams, he's starting again. Kenyon Drake against Quan Alexander is a matchup.
It'll be fun to watch.
I'm looking forward to the watch.
He doesn't even make it through a quarter. He catches one ball. Drake, you're back in there. Greenlaw's back in there.
All right, let's kick it to the Sunday night game now, where the Cowboys are 3-point favorites traveling out to L.A. to face the Rams. New stadium out there. Eric, how do you see this one going?
The Rams have been the team that I, maybe other than Minnesota, that I've liked the least this season. This number has moved out to 3. It was like 1.5 early. I think the home field advantage thing is, again, people are betting road teams this week, it appears, at least leading up to it. When I look at the Rams, I see a lot of missing parts. Jalen Ramsey's awesome. He's going to get all the money. But you lost Eric Weddle. You lost Corey Littleton. You lost, I think most importantly, Wade Phillips, Deontay Fowler. And then on the kicking game side, you lost Zuerlein. You lost Jim Fossil. And you have to look nowhere else but where they went, which is Dallas, a team that led the league in yards per play on offense and was a top 10 defense in yards per play and finished 8-8 because they couldn't make kicks. I think Dallas is going to boat race the Rams in this game because Dallas is the team with something to prove. I mean, Mike McCarthy's trying to prove that he wasn't the problem in Green Bay. Dak Prescott's trying to prove he deserves a contract. There's just so many reasons to like Dallas in this game. The Rams, I think, are a team that just I think they're going to struggle this year in an improving NFC West.
Rams want to run the football, right? They're going from a one-back system where they were reliant upon one runner to generate the production in Todd Gurley, and now they think Darrell Henderson, Cam Akers, and Malcolm Brown in that three-back system, like what they saw the Niners doing, right? Sean McVay comes from that system. He has been outspoken about the fact that they're going to go to a three-back system and see who emerges. Remember, last time they played Dallas at the end of 2018 in the playoffs, they racked up, 270 plus rushing yards. That's going to be the plan. I don't see it going that way. I don't see Mike Nolan allowing his defense to just get run through by the Rams offense. And the Rams aren't quite the same offensive line that they were 2 years ago. There's so many different things that are different. I know what they're going to try to do, and I know the things that they want to do in 2020. I don't think they're going to be able to do it against this Cowboys defense. I think the defense runs the show, and I think the offense for the Dallas Cowboys, I think they're going to have their way as well. I'm taking the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, the issue here to me is what Eric said about holes. They have massive problems with this roster. Linebacker, probably the worst group of linebackers in the league. Their edge rush. Leonard Floyd is their best edge rusher right now on paper.
Offensive line was
terrible. Interior offensive line, arguably among the worst in the NFL. There are massive problem spots. And in the NFL, offense coordinators, defense coordinators can attack your problem spots. If you have holes that bad, you will get exposed in those areas.
Well, that's what you tweeted out about the weak link systems. That's there are positions where so on offense, wide receiver is not a weak link system because you can decide who to throw to. Defensive line's not a weak link system because you can move guys around. Offensive line, because they're stationary and the other team can move their defensive linemen around, that's a weak link system. Secondary, same thing. You can move your receivers around and so you can attack the negative. That's where the Rams struggle. I mean, and Ramsey's great, but he's not a slam dunk. He's not a lock to be Deion Sanders every year. He's a very good corner in the NFL.
We've seen
and you're going up
great.
Against Amari Cooper also. Yeah. Like, yeah.
If you shut down Cooper, CeeDee Lamb. And Blake Jarwin was one of the most efficient tight ends on a per route basis a season ago. Like, this could be the problem that I also have is people are talking about this as a high scoring game. Are we convinced that Jared Goff can do it when
everything's not right?
Everything's not right when you can't run boots all the time and when you can't like
half field reads.
Yeah. Dallas is moving in the right direction from a regression standpoint on defense. Lawrence wasn't as good last season. You have guys who I think are extremely talented in Alden Smith who are going to probably surprise. The both of their linebackers, Van Der Esch and Smith, were bad last season after being good the season before.
Banged up.
There's some positive regression I think you see with those two guys. I don't know why Earl Thomas isn't signed yet, but they're still okay at safety. And at corner, like, I think Trayvon Diggs is going to be better than what people think.
Absolutely. I like the secondary. I think they'll be good enough. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the Rams will be able to exploit whatever it may ail this defense or may be wrong about this secondary. I think the Cowboys should win this. They should be very strong against the Rams. You're right. The Rams, too many holes for me to take them.
Yeah, I'll make it unanimous. I think Cowboys, and I think 3 is just crazy low for that line. All right, Monday Night Football now, 2 games. First one up, Steelers, 6-point favorites, traveling to the Giants. The DeAndre Baker-less now, Giants. Where do you see this one ending up, Eric?
This moved from about, 4.5 early? 4, and now it's all the way out to 6. Pittsburgh. So Solomon, I want your opinion. You know, that secondary is just so good, right? And it's you know, Minka was the missing link, but, they also had, Steven Nelson was one of the most valuable corners in the league last year. Yep. Can sort of show you how, like, volatile corner play is. They had Mike Hilton in the slot.
He's always been great.
You know, they had Joe Hayden. And at linebacker, Devin Bush is, I think, a lot better than what we, he played pretty well a season ago. And up front, their front seven was the most valuable front seven in football last year per PFF WAR. So, like, all of that, I think people are looking at, okay, these are the table stakes. We still got to 8 wins last year with 2 terrible quarterbacks.
With no quarterbacks.
And so everything has to move up. I'm going to push back on it a little bit, and here's why. Big Ben was a bottom half of the league graded quarterback in 2018. Juju, and that was with Antonio Brown and Juju playing the second role. Juju's in that first role now. The offensive line's a little sketchy, and it's not repeatable to force a turnover on over 20% of offensive drives, which is what Pittsburgh did a season ago. And so I think long term, I understand what this line move is doing. I'm just a little bit bearish on Pittsburgh as a sort of an entity.
Simply because the turnovers are not a repeatable skill, right? You don't expect them to be able to duplicate that. The real good thing is that they do the things that cause turnovers. They hustle. They out-physical you up front with Cameron Hayward. He's one of the absolute best interior defensive linemen that maybe we don't talk about enough. And the reason why they're the only defense to have 50 or more sacks in each of the last 3 seasons is because they're so disruptive in the middle. T.J. Watt is an effort player. Like, the things that you can do consistently week in and week out, that's play hard. That's bring your effort. And that's what T.J. Watt does, right? It's like a Watt trait. It's in their DNA. So that's why the defense, once they got Minka Fitzpatrick, what it made them is more disciplined on the back end, where they're not giving up these big shots and blowing coverages, and they didn't know what they were doing. He solidified everything, but the effort is still there with this group. I'm not saying they're going to still get those turnovers, but I will say this. They're going to continue to do the things that lead to getting turnovers. And that's why I don't know that the Giants could exploit anything
and Daniel Jones,
this defense may or may not do.
5.5% of Daniel Jones' dropbacks this rookie year were turnover-worthy.
There you go.
So this particular game, I have a really hard time saying Giants any sort of way, shape, or form. I'm just saying for Pittsburgh, I understand why the market's moving on Pittsburgh. And I think that the Pittsburgh might blow them out this week.
The market will hold up for this game. I could tell.
But if you want a team maybe to fade in week two and beyond, it might be Pittsburgh. Because I think they're going to win this game like 41-3, and then they'll be favored in the next game.
The thing I love about Pittsburgh's defensive line that you kind of touched on is they're built like the Eagles were when they won the Super Bowl, and that everyone, even when they don't win their rushes necessarily, they're collapsing the pocket. The way they rush is collapsing the pocket consistently. And when you have four across of guys that can do that, sometimes when they had Hargrave, five across, that just, even when maybe guys don't get home, it just is making your life more difficult as a quarterback.
I think Devin Bush, he's going to be a star in this defense.
I agree.
I can just tell you that right now. At the beginning of the year, he had some moments, right? Mm-hmm. But as the season went on, he became more and more of a presence. I think year two, I think he becomes a superstar within the middle of this defense. They have too many playmakers not to be good on defense. And by the way, little birdies all over the place are calling me and telling me about Chase Claypool and what he's doing every day in practice against this defense.
Yeah.
So just pay attention.
Since your time in Pittsburgh, Sully, all they've done is draft good receivers.
That's exactly right.
Like, it doesn't surprise me at all.
He's another one. And James Washington had a good year. Deontay Johnson. I mean, with no quarterbacks, right? These receivers had a breakout year. We know that Juju went in the witness protection program, so when he disappeared.
Well, Deontay Johnson. Eric Ebron, too.
Yeah, and Deontay Johnson and James Washington, they broke out, and not enough people are talking about that. But by all accounts, all reports, good eyes on the ground is that Chase Claypool has been tearing it up every day in practice. Don't be surprised if he has a big-time game against the Giants.
I do tend to agree, though, with Eric. I'm picking the Steelers in this one. It sounds like we're all picking the Steelers in this one. But the worrisome thing is Big Ben has took a stark downward trend. He had an elbow injury that is not necessarily a good thing for a quarterback.
It was there.
And he's not young.
And he's not the guy that takes – he's not Tom Brady with his
eye. I'm not a doctor, but you guys follow baseball, and you probably have heard of the surgery.
Tommy John surgery.
You didn't have Tommy John, though.
No, I didn't have Tommy John.
Ben didn't have Tommy John, but it's
similar to the Tommy John thing. And that's why you heard Kevin Colbert – at the combine, he just looked at the press and he smiled. He says, "We think Ben's going to be better." Everyone this time last year when Ben went down, they're going to need a quarterback. They shouldn't trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick. They're going to need to get a quarterback. No. They were cool. They believe he's going to come back better. He's throwing the ball better by all accounts. He just returned from a bear hunting trip with some people. I know he's in great shape. He did shed the pounds.
He did.
Okay, he's come out of hibernation. all I'm saying is that for those of us who have been around these kind of injuries, the elbow there's no arm strength loss as a result. And so I wouldn't factor in on that one in terms of his demise or any diminishing returns on Ben's play.
All right, last game of the week. An exciting one with some AFC playoff implications. Titans, 2.5-point favorites, traveling to Denver to face the Broncos. Von Miller-less Broncos now after an ankle injury, ended his season, put him on IR. If there is a home field advantage, though, to me, it is Denver, the altitude, early in the season, with guys not in playing shape yet. I think that's the one that I actually say will still translate. The other teams with, the traditional ones, Arrowhead, Seattle, I'm not sure those will, but I think Denver is still a big one.
Denver at home in September is a really hard thing to overcome.
Yeah.
The one thing that I'll say that takes away from it a little is this game is played at 8 o'clock in Mountain Time, which means you're not going to get the combination of altitude and heat that you normally get in September and when they're almost unbeatable at home. This number opened at 2.5, Tennessee being underdogs. They're now 2.5 now. Just a little bit of betting knowledge. We talked about this on our new PFF Betting Daily podcast. 2.5 points to 2.5 points, that's 5 points. Those aren't worth nearly as much as a normal like move. If you move through three like the Minnesota Green Bay game did, that's 9%. This is far less than 9%. So this move is mostly cosmetic, but I do think, you know, you add Clowney to a Titans defense for which my only question mark was how were they going to rush the passer. Tannehill, I think his career prior to losing two seasons to ACLs was underrated. And I think last year was obviously a blip, but it was far more in the direction of where his career was going before getting hurt under Adam Gase than I think people are giving him credit for. So I agree with this line move. I like the Titans all year this year, and especially in this game.
You know what I like about the Titans, well, especially in this game? Because I'm buying some stock in Drew Lock. I'm not wholesale buying stock in Drew Lock. I like the receivers around him and Jerry Jeudy. I love Courtland Sutton, KJ Hamler. They're all going to be good at the tight end position as well. Except for this defense for the Tennessee Titans, I think is probably one of the more underrated defenses, maybe one of the more underrated secondaries. And I think they're going to be really good against a very young offense for the Denver Broncos. I think Malcolm Butler still can hold up. They bring over Jonathan Joseph, who we know is still good. Adoree Jackson is coming off his very best season, I think, and still getting better. Their safeties are good at taking the ball away and pattern reading and doing all the things. Mike Vrabel, the one thing I think maybe is not said enough about the way that he coaches and what kind of team he wants. He wants physical football teams. That's what their offense and defensive line is all about. In the secondary, they're going to punish people. And when your young receivers, your rookies coming into the league, like Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler, the one thing you hear rookies talk about, speed of the game. One thing they don't tell you is the physicality of this game. And I think that newness is going to set in here. Tennessee is going to be the more physical team. I think they're going to surprise the Broncos. And that altitude is real. I played collegiately in Boulder. Mm-hmm. And I can remember my very first game there. I'll tell you right now, it taps you on the shoulder. And so, yes, they're going to have to be prepared for the high altitude for the Tennessee Titans. But the Titans they're tried and tested. I think they'll be ready for this game. And by adding Jadeveon Clowney and taking Von Miller off the field, man, that's enough to tip the scale all by itself.
Yeah, if they had Von Miller, I would have felt great about the Broncos in this one. Going up against Dennis Kelly, straight up mismatch. I think he could have taken over that game without him. I think I'm still going to go Broncos, though. I still believe in this receiving core. I think Jerry Jeudy hits the ground running right out the gate. Him and Courtland Sutton, I think it's just going to be too much for even Drew Lock to screw up. I think that pass offense will be good still. I'm going to go with the Broncos, but it's more just if they didn't have the altitude aspect.
Do you think Christian Fulton will be happy to see Jerry Jeudy or unhappy?
Unhappy.
The Titans, but to your point, Solomon, the Titans have some depth in the secondary, which I think makes them pretty anti-fragile in the AFC this year. Mm-hmm. Byard, Malcolm Butler was a big loss for them last year when he got hurt. Adoree Jackson. Yep. They're not bad on defense, and I think
they're one of the most complete teams, just like position by position.
And if they stay healthy, I mean, their defense really struggled once some guys got hurt. If they stay healthy on defense, this game, I think that under 50 plays for both teams might be a decent bet, just because I think Tennessee's going to try to lengthen the game out a little bit, from a in between plays perspective with Derrick Henry, and I don't know if Denver can do much to stop
that. It'll be interesting because Denver Broncos still have questions about their offensive line, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we don't know if they're going to be able to just move people off the ball in this game, but it'll be interesting to see how they use their trio of running backs and Melvin Gordon joining this group. We know what Phillip Lindsay can do. I think he's still one of the toughest pound-for-pound running backs in this league. And then Royce Freeman. How are they going to integrate those three players within this offense to be able to get production with all of that talent and skill? Because they're young at the skill positions around the quarterback, except for in the backfield. And so, to me, if you haven't had a real offseason and you're trying to get things going, you've got to find a way to use the experience they have from those three running backs to help your young quarterback in Drew Lock.
Going Titans?
I'm going. I got to go with the Titans.
Sal's going Titans. Eric's going Titans. I'm going Broncos. There you have it. There are all the picks. Sam and Steve may be back next week. We don't know. We need two negative tests to get off the COVID list.
We need two negative tests.
So the reserve COVID
list.
We'll
get that done in a week.
Two negative tests. We'll see you then. Thanks for tuning in. As you guys know, or should know, I'm also the host, or a co-host, excuse me, of the 2-for-1 Drafts podcast, where we break down everything draft prospects and rookies all year long, me and Austin Gale. If you're not checking out the PFF family of podcasts, you guys are missing out if you're just listening to the NFL show. We have the Fantasy Football Podcast with Ian Harditz, the Forecast with Eric Eager over here, and George Shahuri. That's, they break down from an analytical perspective the game of football. And we've also got a few new podcasts for you. We have the College Football Podcast with Seth Galina, and I may be making an appearance on that once or twice a week. We have the Unexpected Points Podcast with fantasy analyst Kevin Cole. We have the PFF Daily Betting Podcast. The PFF Daily Betting Podcast with a rotation of guys. They are giving you day-to-day updates on all things betting. And then the soon-to-be Chris Collinsworth podcast coming soon. And don't forget, you can find all of our betting tools on PFF Greenline. That comes with a PFF Elite subscription. And right now, with the code KICKOFF30, that's KICKOFF30, you get 30% off any PFF subscription. You can get my draft guide with an Edge or Elite subscription, or like I said, that PFF Green Line comes with an Elite subscription. It's good for PFF Elite, Edge, or any college football subscription as well. So make sure you guys use the promo code KICKOFF30 and check that out.